and MNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. Well, we have another week going, Mary.
You know, it's reached a point that I pretty much have one ear cocked to the latest news. I mean, it really, if anything, much more. Well, at least I don't feel we're quite on the brink of war, but I don't feel much more comfortable about our warring status. But with the impeachment and the papers being delivered, and then with Supreme Court Justice Roberts today, swearing them in, it's really big time here, and everything else is happening at the same time. And so all I can say is, people, try and get whatever rest you can. Make it profitable. Maybe you'll have to start meditating to get some extra calm. Take your vitamins and hang on, because this is an extraordinarily exciting time to be living. And what else can I say? But also, a lot of it is kind of troubling, because we realize so many things we're looking at are things that have been piling up, you know, kind of like a dam ready to burst. And unfortunately, the kind of end results of these kind of lack of due diligence, you might say, in the previous 20, 30 years is really coming home to haunt us. And so luckily, I can tell the young people are up to it. But we have to give them a world that they can survive in, so they can actually do their thing. And so the challenges are great. But anyway, people are fighting back in every way they can. And the biggest thing you can do is that, stay really informed. But also remember that we, each one of us, every moment of the day, we have to be doing something to mitigate climate change. Because of all the problems we have, that is perhaps our most urgent. And in a connection with that, we'll be talking to Linda Pence Gunter in the second part of the show. And we'll be following up. I hope you heard Rob Lori talking to the Lakeland commissioner of their energy there about their consideration of small nuclear modular reactors and perhaps thorium. And Linda is quite an expert, and so she will bring us up to date why that really is not a good idea. Nuclear is not the way to go. We never have, and one of the many problems we've never solved. But hey, we'll do that tomorrow, right? What to do with the waste, but also we don't have the 10 to 15 year lag time between the decision to do and to actually implement, particularly being the factories to make the pre-assembled modules for that aren't even there. And so it's kind of, anyway, but Linda Gunter will fill you in on that. And before that, there's something really, I think, to celebrate. it's going to be another long track, but Virginia yesterday passed the ERA, and the governor is expected to sign it. And Kim Porteous, I don't believe she actually went there to Virginia to watch the vote, but she'll tell us that, and so we will be getting in touch with her. And then we will be discussing toward the end of the show about the Women's March, coming up this coming Saturday. So a lot happening. So keep it tuned, people. Put your seatbelts on and try and make it a better world. And so, Arlene, did you have anything you wanted to say? Then I'm going to put this music on, and we will come back with Kim Porteous, the Florida president of now.
Now when the people shout, you got to hear them out.
Well, I'm going to pod this down because I'm very happy to say we have Kim Porteous, the executive president of Florida Now, with us on the phone at a very exciting time. So, Kim Porteous, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It is an exciting time.
Well, Virginia yesterday did what we were all hoping they would do and have become, well, the governor, when's it going to go to the governor's desk to be signed? Because he has said he will sign it. Isn't that right?
Well, actually, it's not required by the governor to sign.
Oh.
So even though he's a very big supporter of the ERA, yesterday with the House first passing the ERA, and then the Senate passing the ERA, today it goes to a crossover, and it is officially then, and that's just a protocol. We already know how they're going to vote. And then that they will send their information to the Constitutional Archivist from there.
Okay. And were you there, Kim, or did you watch it online?
I watched it online yesterday. I was there last week when their first legislative day started to welcome back the legislators and to ensure that they did, you know, made quick work of the ERA, and it was so exciting. We had advocates from at least, I know there was Georgia Now as well as Florida Now and all over, really, cheering on for the ERA, and the equal means equal people, feminist majority were there as well, and of course Now, and then there's a young organization called Generation Ratify, And they are mostly all high schoolers or middle schoolers, and they were also there. So it was a large, lovely, festive, excited crowd.
Well, you know, I'm really excited that the young people are really aware of it because they really are aware of climate change and some of the other really serious problems we have. And I think it's kind of sad, but apparently we realize that women aren't mentioned in the Constitution, you know, except to have the vote. And then it seems pretty sad that we have to fight to make sure that we have equality, but obviously we do. And so tell me also with the Virginia legislature, isn't it the first time in the history that a woman actually is the chair?
That's right, the Speaker of the House, and not only a woman, it's also the first time a Jewish person has been the Speaker of the House in Virginia. So and the Democratic Party is led, of course, now also by a woman, and the Republican Party is now being led by a woman in Virginia, and so they're just making records all over Virginia right now for women on both sides of the aisle. But, of course, the Republicans mostly still did not support the ERA.
That
was some interesting speeches. I don't know if your listeners got to hear some of those, but to hear people stand opposed to equality in the Constitution for women in 2020 is just shocking and appalling still.
Well, tell us some of the reasons they gave, because most of us weren't able. Yesterday, also, we were watching the impeachment papers being delivered, and so a lot is going down. So tell us, what were some of the reasons they gave?
Well, some of the reasons is that we didn't need it. They were saying that because women are breaking so many barriers right here and in leadership in Virginia, this is evidence of why we don't need equality in our Constitution. Just unnecessary. And that argument was quickly repudiated by the women who were also mostly women of color or trans women who said, you know what, we're privileged to be here. Our circumstances have led us opportunities to be here, but we don't represent the average everyday fight that women are facing. We know sexual assault is out there happening all the time. We know that women are still getting less pay than their male counterparts. We know that violence towards women of all kinds is still on the rise, and our pay gap is no better, and our opportunities for promotion are no better than they were. We're more educated. We are also 50%, over 50% of our payroll employees in America are women, but yet we're still seeing these fundamental problems. So that was their argument, their counter argument. Another issue they bring up is the fact that a gender. They like to say women and or females. They like to say females and males. They prefer if this was rewritten to specifically give equality to females and males. And that is a bigoted anti-LGBTQ plus statement. So that's a flatline statement that they have that's bigoted against specifically trans women or non-binary community. So another argument was abortion rights, that the ERA would give abortion access to women. And you know what? They're probably true. If you can have reproductive rights as a male, then why shouldn't you have them as a woman as well? So we're unapologetic about that. It's time that we stop that narrative. How dare legislators still try to attack one part of women's bodies when they won't give us full constitutional equality? That's a sham argument.
How dare they feel they can control women's bodies in any way, period, you know, regardless of what part of the anatomy they're going after. And, you know, that it's really interesting that women on both sides, both Republicans and Democrats, have really had it to the teeth. And so you've spent a lot of time on the ground in Virginia in various capacities there. And so I'm curious, how has this evolution occurred? Was it, frankly, you know, all these injustices that women have been fighting, and now that they're more educated and, you know, need to be in the workforce in order, you almost need two salaries in a family in order to, you know, have any quality of living at all, and the need for daycare, the prohibitive problems that an awful lot of women have, that did that accumulate, and they realized that if they don't do it themselves and force this on the issue, it's not going to happen. And also, do you think that Trump's obvious misogyny, appallingly so, just went totally over the line? What has happened that Virginia has so transpired? Because as I understand it, ERA was pretty big in the last kind of election cycle, and it carried through, and this time really was strong. So give us a rundown what you think happened in Virginia.
Well, Virginia is a chain of effects, and it wasn't just Virginians. It was a lot of folks working in Virginia, but Virginians took the lead, and they really spent time at the Capitol challenging legislators of, you know, why don't you want women to have equality? We need to ratify the ERA. And so there was an incredible ground force. It was small. So the people weren't necessarily educated, but the legislators were intensely educated. The legislators were brave enough, unlike Florida legislators such as Representative Bob Rommel or Senator Davis Simmons, who won't even put it on the agenda in their committees. Legislators on both sides would put it on the agenda in Virginia and have this discussion. And what they were hearing is more and more women and people coming to stand for the ERA. And so it was certainly mentioned yesterday that they had multitude of discussions about the ERA in the past few years. I definitely think Donald Trump's election put more fire in the rights for pushing for equality, because literally we elected a man who said he, you know, could grab a woman mm-hmm. by you know what. And so right after that, Nevada,
yeah.
Just a few months later, they pushed it over the edge and started this ball rolling. And yes, we have the court challenges ahead of us, but we're fighting back, and we're not going to stop. And whatever they want to say about the ERA this year, we're going to make it an election issue that, you know, this is not the year to stand in the way of equality for women and or all of us. This is our year.
And you know that when you said back that they were the opponents were upset, they want to say specifically female and male. And when I was listening to you, I thought, you know, that kind of language is absolutely not dignified enough to be in the Constitution. You know, and I think it's really important now, because really, when the Constitution and the basic premises and the language of it and the meaning of it is really being so challenged on a national level, you know, does Congress have the right to impeach? You know, do they have the right right to declare and fund war. I mean, our Constitution is being really threatened. And I think it's really important that you've got women, that a lot of young women too, that are quite aware that actually, if it isn't actually spelled out in writing in the Constitution with the ERA, that it doesn't have the legitimacy of full citizenship, if you will. And so they realize that this is rock bottom. This country is based on its Constitution and its interpretation of it. And to me, it really is such a central issue, really, that we're seeing manifest now all over. Don't you think, Kim?
I agree. And we must keep it going because I'm a woman in her 50s. No, I'm sorry. I'm not in my 50s. I'm in my 40s. I'm yet to be in my 50s. I'm still a Gen Xer in my 40s. But I'm old enough to remember being fired because I was pregnant and being sexually assaulted at work. I know that people are still fired because they're pregnant and they're still sexually assaulted in the workplace. But the generation before me, my ancestors, I remember them talking about having to hide the fact that they were even married because they could be fired or would be fired. Teachers couldn't be high school teachers and be married just a few decades ago. So those things, no laws have changed. We must have that constitutional equality, like you're saying, to ensure that we have those rights, because they can be given today and taken away tomorrow, but a constitutional change is not that. It is security, and it is a future that we can count on. So we must educate, and that's why I'm very excited about organizations like Generation, and the word Gen is the ERA is capitalized in it. If you're looking, so it's Generation Ratify, and they are, you know, they're just coming out and leading. They're not waiting. We're really inspired by the young people starting to take on. But we have to do the education. They don't necessarily understand it, and there are so many fights right now. Especially when we look at the LGBTQ community, trans women are under attack, like in an incredible
being murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yes, being murdered, being, you know, have unemployed. They don't have the same economic opportunities, and so a lot of the younger generation may say, "Well, you know, shouldn't we fight for them?" The ERA is a fight for them. It's a fight for all of us, and it's a statement, and I'll say it's a demand. That we have equality for all of us in the Constitution. And New York has become the first state this past week to introduce, the governor last week in his State of the State address, introduced what they call the expanded ERA, which is diversity ERA, and includes not only the LGBTQ plus community, but also disabilities, people with disabilities community. So the fire for the equal rights is inspiring all of us to say, no, this is a land for the people, and we are all the people, and so we deserve and demand equality for all of us.
And Kim, and again, we're talking to Kim Portis, and she is the executive director of Florida Now, and very excited that Virginia has passed, become the 38th state. But we realize that we are being challenged in every direction, and it's nice to celebrate, but we also realize that it's going to be challenged, that it's too late, that there was, you know, a deadline that was long since passed, and that quotes there are like five states that want to rescind it. And so where do we go from here, Kim?
Where we go is right now Equal Means Equal has filed a lawsuit. The one that was filed by Alabama, South Dakota, and Louisiana, the government basically said, yeah, we agree with you. And when they wrote out the Department of Justice memo saying it's an expired amendment. However, you know, we have legal grounds to challenge that. Equal Means Equal is taking the lead on that. And so that is definitely one way. Another way is...
And just quickly with that, Kim, that actually what we just had an amendment passed not that long, which was 200 years right. in the making. And also that with the 14th and 15th Amendment, you had some states that wanted to withdraw their agreement to it, and that wasn't allowed. So there's a lot of precedent here that has to be examined. They can't just say it was a deadline, it was passed, that's it. Historically, we have to look at this in context.
That's right. And when it was officially written, it didn't include a deadline. The deadline was just an amendment to the amendment. you're absolutely right about 200 years passed by, and we ratified a constitutional amendment, the only one that's been done in my lifetime and most of us's lifetime. So that was one piece for sure. The fact that we already extended it shows that that it is the Congress and the Senate that has the right to extend that deadline. There are bills currently in the House led by Representative Jackie Speier, she is phenomenal. And they have had hearings on these. They should have a vote very soon. There's bills in the House, or there's a piece of legislation in the House or the Senate that will lift that deadline. We're about two senators shy from being able to pass that. If theoretically, if we get those two signatures, two senators, and we pass in both the bill and the House and the Senate, it would then go to Donald Trump, if he was still the president, to sign, to lift that deadline. So it'd be very interesting. See what happens. But since his DOJ has already spoken on, they think that this is a dead amendment, they're sending a very long, clear message. Too long, our legislators have been saying, oh, we don't need it. But what they're really saying is we don't want you to have it. We don't want women to have equal rights. We don't want you to have equal access and responsibilities to this country like men do. That's what they're saying. And no matter what party someone is, they need to hear that message loud and clear that they're saying to all the girls and boys that boys have protections in our Constitution and girls do not. And that kind of fundamental statement affects all of us, and it's pervasive in our culture, and we must change it. It shows up everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we've had way, way too many years of saying, oh, don't worry about that. We'll take care of you. Not to worry. And we realize, we take care of ourselves. We stand on our own two legs. And we've got very strong, good legs, thank you. And everybody needs us. And so also, Kim, the Florida legislature has started. And so what are you planning to do, not only with the ERA, but as I understand it, this coming up Wednesday, the 22nd, there's going to be a huge rally supporting Roe versus Wade. And are you going to be involved in that? And bring us up to date with some of the plans or some of the issues you think are most important facing the legislature.
Right. Well, we definitely are a co-sponsor of the event for the Roe v. Wade anniversary next week. So proud to have Florida Now as one of the sponsors for that. But there will be a big rally. I'll be there for sure. And just because we have the 38th state does not mean that we're going to stop in Florida. In fact, we're going to speed it up in Florida. We're going to be pushing that they at least take a stand on this. One way or the other, we want them to take a stand, have a hearing. So we will be present. Florida Now has rented a house in Tallahassee for our members to go and educate the legislators on our issues. And this week we opened up the house just like they did the legislative session, and we've already had 14 beds will be filled by the end of the week that have had people there standing for education. We went to stand for educators this week. We've also stand for the farm workers. There's bills to support farm workers. Of course, there's the attacks on reproductive rights that is just offensive, the parental consent bill. That we're standing in strong opposition against. And we also are standing, there's bills that are directly to harm trans women. So we're standing in opposition of those. We're standing with bills to stop conversion, what they call therapy, experiences in Florida, so we're standing with those. There are bills that should be passed this year to provide consent education to schools. So Anna Estimani has sponsored a bill for, to fund consent. So having a discussion of consent and what that means, what it looks like with our children and middle schoolers is essential, and it's a great bill. So we'll be standing with bills like that, as well as the climate change, the bill that Anna Escamani is also supporting for that to be clean energy by 2050. And we're standing, of course, against these terrible attacks they do on alimony year after year. So we have a huge...
Indeed, that is a very long agenda.
Yes, and rape kids. They're, we want those funded and tested. And lift the deadline for the timeline for people to also file charges against sexual assault for children. There are so many things going on. But what we know is we're going to be up there and present and fighting for each one of them. On March 8th, which is the Sunday before the last week of the legislative session, as well as it is International Women's Day, we're going to have a big rally and call out the legislators for what they've either done to us, against us, or have left undone, and like equal pay bills. They have... Senator Stewart can't even get a hearing for her equal pay bill. So we'll be able to really call them out and the most excitable way we can as they start the last week. And then we're going to go right into the election season, get involved in the primaries of our most offenders if they have candidates running against them, and then make this election issue all the way to November 2020.
Well, that's quite a list, Kim, and I am going to be following up with you. And March 8th, we'll have to see what we can coordinate for that, because I think that's a splendid idea. Let's have a report card, and we hope it's not an F minus.
That's right.
We need to at least see a B. But anyway, Kim Porteous, so we've gone through an awful lot of areas. Anything we didn't mention that you particularly want to mention?
Not at this time. We just thank you for your attention and your constantly holding that mantle up for equality for women. I really appreciate the time, and thank you very much.
Well, it is so important to all of us, Kim, and we're gonna make this. So it's a proud moment, and we will be following up with you. So you do take care, okay?
Okay, and everybody celebrate the ERA this week. Post it on your media. Talk about it with your friends. And use this moment to celebrate, because we do have a fight ahead, but celebrate this huge piece right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim Porteous. You keep up the great work, okay?
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. And again, Kim Porteous, Executive Director of NOW. It's really pretty exciting, really. But, Arlene?
It is exciting.
But, to get the vote 72 years, it's been 100 years with ERA, because Alice Paul recognized from the get-go that having to vote would not be enough. And so a long time ago, our foremothers said we've got to have equality, in the Constitution actually written there. And, boy, she was totally on the money. And so here we go. But I'm getting kind of tired of taking 700 years, 75 years. Climate change, and we don't have that kind of luxury, but... anyway, but still, it is a victory. Go ahead, Arlene.
I did post on our Facebook page the link to the film Equal Means Equal.
Yeah, yes, I think it is, right? Right, you can watch it now online. And so it's very informative in so many ways. Okay, well, as I mentioned earlier, I hope you heard Rob Lori's show. I don't know if it was a couple weeks ago, talking about the possibility of the consideration in Lakeland of a smaller nuclear modular plant do something about global warming. And so I'm going to put this music on, and we will be coming back with Linda Pence Gunter from Beyond Nuclear International, and she will be giving us some reasons why they should reconsider. So let's just put this music on, and we'll come back with Linda Gunter. nobody should live in despair. Well, I am so happy because with us on the phone is a guest we've had before. She's quite a nuclear expert, and she is with Beyond Nuclear and now also the editor of just, I think, a wonderful extension, actually, because, Linda, I have used Beyond Nuclear for information for a long time. You give just wonderful information, very scientifically based, et cetera, but very understandable. But I really love your new extension, Beyond Nuclear International, because it's really tying together all of climate change and people's concerns and just a little bit more friendly you never had to be a scientist before, but I think it's really wonderful. And so, Linda Pence-Gunter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mary. And you crystallize exactly the purpose of Beyond Nukes International, to really reach out beyond the diehard anti-nuclear activists to people who are concerned about climate change and the future of the planet.
Yeah, and here we are, you know, that with climate change just, well, all you have to do is be following really kind of the horrors in Australia right now. And also looking what just happened, you know, with General Soleimani being assassinated, and is Iran going to go ahead and develop its nuclear weapons, and the constant problem we've had with the association of nuclear power plants and weapons, nuclear power and weapons let into nuclear power. And here we are now with global climate change, which is... It's not coming. It's here, and it's really serious. And so it was pretty upsetting, actually, when I was hearing on our station that, that Lakeland, a very near community and in our listening audience, was actually considering small modular nuclear power as a way to totally cut carbon emissions, one of the whole program. And tell me, Linda, do you think any kind of nuclear is the way to go to be part of the solution of climate change?
Well, clearly not, and there's two very compelling reasons for that. Even if you discount the weapons connection, the safety, the security issues, the waste, the fact is that we're out of time, and nuclear power plants take a very long time to build, and they're extremely expensive. And so it makes no sense at this juncture to do anything that will take 10 to 15 years, as they're talking about in Lakeland, and will cost the consumer a huge amount of money when those dollars could generate far more electricity far faster being invested in renewable energy and energy efficiency.
You know, I spend a lot of time in your website, both of them, Beyond Nuclear and Beyond Nuclear International, and I really learned a lot of things. I knew wind and solar, when it really got up, was going to be much cheaper. I had no idea it was that much cheaper, and I was really kind of surprised to find out that actually, rather than saving money, the small modular nuclear plants actually are more expensive, and not only because they're going to, of course, be factory assembled and brought to the site, because those factories, number one, don't exist, and so I guess you'd have to have it on site for the first few that are going down. But I didn't realize that actually it's not even a good economic investment, these small modular plants.
Well, no nuclear power is a good economic investment. They're incredibly expensive. And as we've seen in this country as well as elsewhere, the initial cost estimates are never accurate. It's always way, way higher than that. And in addition to that, as I said, the time it takes to build them and the fact that consumers pay, as has happened in Florida and also in South Carolina, will pay in advance for these plants, which may never materialize. And so you're looking at a way to gouge ratepayers, taxpayers, consumers, wait a very long time for something that will deliver very little. I mean, the Lakeland thing is sort of a pipe dream, really. It's pie in the sky. I mean, if they only need to bring on 136 megawatts, to wait 10, 15 years for a small modular reactor, and let's remember, they will not build just one. You know, one small modular reactor will not arrive in Lakeland and be installed and produce those megawatts. You have to, as you said, have a factory. And no one wants to invest up front in a factory where you have to produce hundreds, if not thousands, of these to become cost-effective. It's actually cheaper, although not cheap, to build one big nuclear plant than lots of little ones. And that's not going to happen either, because it's just ludicrously expensive and not practical given what our needs are right now.
Well, and you know, I've already been very worried about nuclear because I know how very serious sea rise is, and I know Florida is really, and not just endangered, but I am actually already worried about places like Turkey Point and others with sea rise. What is going to happen to those retaining ponds? You know, I mean, really, I mean, so I'm already worried about the nuclear waste that we have not ever been able to solve what to do with it. And then to consider adding to that with all the problems we're having, I think it's very short-sighted.
Well, I think, you know, what's going on, which really disturbs me, is we talk about, you know, what we might do in the next 10 to 15 years, or Mr. Ivey's doing that, as if we're not in an abnormal paradigm. We are in an abnormal paradigm. We're in a climate crisis and a climate emergency. As you said at the beginning, what we've seen in Australia is just a preview of things to come. And so we can't just carry on business as usual and say in 10, 15 years we'll put a small modular reactor in. That's just not realistic at all. First of all, the designs for these things are still on paper. There are no designs even certified yet. There's only one design before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and that is the NuScale, which is a traditional pressurized water reactor. These reactors will still make waste. They will still have risks. And the safety measures are going to be trimmed down to make these cheaper to produce. So there's no really sensible plan here afoot that I can see by mentioning this at all, because it's just not going to happen. And what needs to happen to replace coal is the installation quickly of far cheaper, ready renewable energy and energy efficiency. People tend to forget, but that's a great way to save the use of electricity rather than generate yet more of it.
And also, thorium has been mentioned. And the U.S. military, I think, 40, 50 years ago, gave up on thorium. And so why is thorium such a bad idea?
Well, I think that thorium is being advanced in the sort of desperate hope to kind of stay in there somewhere. You know, the nuclear industry is trying to stay alive. It's obviously completely being killed by its own dreadful economics and safety record. And so now we hear things about small modular reactors, and we hear about thorium-fueled reactors. But as you said, attempts in the past have failed. It's a pipe dream. There are no thorium reactors, just as there are no small modular reactors. We really don't have time to tinker with this. Thorium is not fissile, so you still need uranium or plutonium to set up a chain reaction, which makes the thorium fuel actually more expensive than traditional uranium fuel. They still produce radioactive waste at both ends, at the mining end and at the end over the irradiated fuel. And thorium is actually more radiotoxic than uranium, so this sets up higher risks for workers. And you would likely need to reprocess. This is the separation of irradiated uranium fuel to pull out the plutonium to create the fuel to make the thorium reactor fission. So that sets up, of course, all sorts of proliferation risks because plutonium is an essential component of nuclear weapons. So there is no sense to thorium at all. More dangerous, more expensive, more radiotoxic, still produces waste, and I think it's just a last gasp attempt by the nuclear industry to say, well, how about this then? You know, we're still here. But it's a dying industry that is rapidly being replaced by renewable energy and not by natural gas, as some would assert. The facts on the ground show that where nuclear plants are closing, states are turning to wind and solar.
And, you know, I didn't know that much about thorium. I knew the military did, and I knew it wasn't a good idea, and I knew it wasn't feasible. So I always thought from the start, why are they talking about thorium? And so then when I actually found out, you know, that you have to add U-235 or plutonium, you know, to trigger it, so to speak. But I had no idea. I mean, I must admit I was not familiar. I was familiar with uranium-233, but not 232. And I thought, my word, you know, that the gamma radiations from this will go through a foot of concrete. I mean, I find sometimes people involved with nuclear, I kind of scratch my head, and I guess they're just so excited by all this energy and this power. I think they kind of somehow think they're in the heart of the universe, that they kind of lose their rationality. It's so incredibly dangerous that to me it boggles the mind.
And I think they're not expecting to encounter somebody like you that actually, you know, looks this up and understands it and knows what the implications are. They're more likely to assume that we'll all just go, oh, thorium, that sounds like a great idea, you know, that because the way all these things are presented are very oversimplified and very sort of utopian. But in fact, when you start, as you have, to look at the reality of what it really means, it makes no sense whatsoever and presents all sorts of additional risks, costs, and delay. And we are not in a position now where we can delay anything. We have to take radical steps to address the climate crisis, and nuclear just has no role to play there. It's too slow and too expensive and far too dangerous.
And again, we're talking to Linda Gunter, and if you're not familiar with Beyond Nuclear and Beyond Nuclear International, I strongly suggest you go, because it's very informative. It will answer an awful lot of your questions, give you the background and the kind of information. I found a lot of this information out on that website. And Linda, I want to go two different directions here. Number one, you've done so much on your website, and also, and I think so many of us are so worried about climate change. But just for a moment, because I find that the whole issue of weapons, and not only is Iran going to go ahead with nuclear weapons, but even more so, the association of the small modular nuclear power plants, to me, is much more with the kind of energy they want for remote places, for like icebreakers that are going into, but they won't need to have many more icebreakers because the ice is melting. But in other words, it's going to be used in places like that. And I see Russia and China and others developing that. And that also, to me, is a very big worry. And we go back again that nuclear weapons have always been associated with nuclear power plants. That's, isn't that, didn't Japan just pay an enormous sum to keep their nuclear power plant going just to produce the the fissible uranium they need for their U-2 subs?
Well, I think that, the biggest worry for me, if we're going to talk about nuclear weapons, is actually the ones we already have. And the fact that we still have several thousand nuclear weapons between the U.S. and Russia on what's called hair trigger alert, which means you could launch them and within 15 minutes they reach their target with no possibility of recall. So if it's a mistake, it's too late. And the idea that we still have this other existential risk, which is not talked about really very much. You know, when you look at the presidential debates, we talk about a little bit about climate crisis, not enough, but never about the other existential threat, which could wipe us off the face of the earth in minutes, literally. And is a perpetual danger because it's not sort of visible. You know, people don't feel it every day. Obviously, we are feeling the effects of the climate crisis. It's not considered a clear and present danger. But actually it is. And so I think it's essential to remind people that, you know, we could have a nuclear winter, the opposite of global warming, if we don't do something about getting rid of these nuclear weapons. So I'm very glad to see organizations like ICAN getting the attention they did with the Nobel Peace Prize, the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which is rapidly being ratified, will arrive eventually at 50 countries ratifying it, which will make nuclear weapons illegal. And these are very important. Now, I'm less worried about, I don't think small modular reactors will see the light of day, so I'm not so worried about that connection so much. But I do agree with you that this sort of subtext, certainly in the UK, for small modular reactors is to transfer the personnel, technology, and know-how into the military sector, because they are obviously similar and the propulsion technology is similar. So they are all connected, as you say. We have two existential threats that we're facing, and we need to tackle both the climate crisis and the nuclear weapons issue.
And again, we're talking to Linda Gunter, and she's with Beyond Nuclear International, Beyond Nuclear. Also, but going back to climate change, because justifiably so many articles on your site are dealing with the real dangers, the real threats of climate change. And, you know, it is absolutely worrisome, but I realized I was reading one, and I was kind of shocked by the fact the amount of carbon dioxide we have to get out of the air, essentially since the industrial era, and you know, we have to get over half of it out of the air, and we've got no plans, no ideas, but yet there is a lot of faith that we will come up with some kind of technological fix, that we will somehow extract it. I don't know where on earth we'd put it or in what form we'd put it, but, you know, hey, the writers there really bring out, you know, our kind of blindness to totally believing in technology being able to solve our problems, and that somehow we can just keep growing and just keep using and just have 4G, 5G, everybody connected, you know, all of this stuff, and that somehow push doesn't come to shove, that technologically, I mean, get real here, we're talking 10, 15 years when there aren't even ideas, let alone plans, let alone prototypes. So what is our human problem, Linda?
Well, I think, you know, there's two things that it's a little bit like the nuclear problem, in the sense that what we say with nuclear power is the first thing is to stop generating more waste. You know, that's the step one in irresponsibility, to continue to generate radioactive waste when you have no idea what to do with it. On the climate crisis, step one, no more new fossil fuels. No, we cannot drill or burn any new fossil fuels or mine any new fossil fuels at all, really, at this point, which is a huge, steep ask, obviously, and very difficult given the corporate entrenchment and the banks that finance the fossil fuel companies. You know, I've been spending every Friday for the last 14 weeks, I think, protesting in Washington, D.C. with Jane Fonda, mm-hmm. who started Fire Drill Fridays. Uh-huh. And it's interesting that you played that song at the beginning of your show about no one living in with despair, I think mm-hmm. it was, because she talks about climate despair, that people feel this sense of, well, we're doomed, so there's nothing we can do. So there's sort of, on the one hand, I think this sense of it's too impossible, so why even bother? You know, we'll just have to live out our lives and that's it. And there's the other side, which is this, sort of the Fire Drill Friday concept, which is this is an extreme emergency. We have to do everything possible right now, no matter what it is, including civil disobedience, to get these corporations and our governments to take drastic steps right away. And so that's where we're at, I think, is trying to wake people up and say, look, you know, you can't talk about, oh, in 10, 15 years, we'll put a small modular reactor in Lakeland. 10, 15 years from now, the planet is going to be in steep decline unless we do something really radical right away.
Well, you know, Linda, I was really upset that actually, you know, the governor or the prime minister of Australia, you know, who's really quite conservative and has been kind of a denier of climate change, and yet he went on some conservative talk show radio in Australia, and he was being chastised because he was doing too much to abate the fires that are happening. And as I understand it, in Australia, they are so ill-prepared that actually they have kind of local fire departments, and many of them don't even have the basic equipment that, say, a lot of areas here in the United States or other areas have. And I was kind of, I was shocked and very disturbed by that kind of attitude. I don't know how they can see what's happening in their country and not be really alarmed.
No, it's impossible to get inside the heads of these people, and I don't know whether it's just ignorance or denial or they're bought out by the fossil fuel. I mean, he is probably bought out by the fossil fuel industries, but it's very difficult to understand. But I think that pervades everything. You know, there's a fair amount of denial about what a nuclear power plant accident. You know, we have our Nuclear Regulatory Commission who said, even after Fukushima in Japan, that, you know, this was too unlikely an outcome here to need to be adequately prepared for. I mean, incredible. So that means that, in fact, our evacuation plans for an accident in this country are completely impractical and unrealistic and wouldn't work. And we know this.
Okay, Linda, now I'm going back to the Jane Fonda rallies that you're attending every Friday. I'm curious to know, and I was interested in the despair a lot of people feel. And a lot of people do feel despair. That's why I asked you on this show. I'm actually encouraging everybody in some way to be doing something about mitigating climate change in their own lives, but also to be aware that's only one part, that you have to join with others, because it has to be not only your effort, but it has to be the entire effort of the community, the state, the country. And so I'm curious to know, because people care enough to be there, what are they actually saying? What are they trying to do? What are they hoping for?
They're hoping to change the minds of the people whose minds can be changed. So there is, while there's an acknowledgement that, yes, it's important to turn the lights off and not eat meat and so forth, it's not enough. It's good to do it, but at this point, at the juncture we're at now, that won't save us. And so it's the big decisions by the fossil fuel companies, by the banks who finance them, and by the governments who are paid by them that must change their behavior. And so the idea is to try to get support from those who are amenable, so not Mitch McConnell, but those who are amenable to doing something about it, which is why the rallies were always outside the Capitol. A lot of the civil disobedience was either inside one of the Senate buildings or on the Capitol steps. And it's to draw attention to the fact that these are the people who need to make the big changes. There's also a sense that, yes, it's therapeutic. If you go out there and you put your body in a line and you risk arrest, you're at least doing something so you do actually feel better. That's what Jane Fonda really talked about in her own epiphany, was that she felt, she read Naomi Klein's book, she saw Greta Thunberg and what she was doing with Fridays for the Future, and she just felt like, I must change my life. I need to do something. I feel depressed. I need to get out there and do something. And it was very inspiring, energizing. It's going to, the D.C. rallies are finished now, but they're going to spring them off around the country. They've encouraged people to start their own. Jane Fonda is going to continue hers in California. We've just got to keep making noise. And the other reason that that strategy was chosen was that, as everybody said time and again in the speeches, we've written letters, we've made telephone calls, we've signed petitions, we've done all the things you're supposed to do, and nothing's changed. So now we have to resort to nonviolent civil disobedience and try to get as many people in the streets. And as Jane said, build an army, although not everybody was thrilled with the military terminology, but that's the words we have, you know, build an army of people who will rise up and say, no, we don't accept this. And that's really all that's left that we can do.
Yeah, I think we really need mass protest, nonviolent, but mass. I mean, really massive numbers of people out, you know, holding their feet to the fire of their own congressperson, their senator, and just saying, we can't take this anymore. We want to live. We want our children. We want our grandchildren to be able to live in a viable society. And to me, that should be worth, you know, getting out there and saying, we can't keep doing what we're doing. And yeah. So keep up your great work, Linda. We've covered, a lot of topics. Is there anything particularly you wanted to mention that we didn't talk about?
Well, I just, you know, to wrap that thought up, I think, you know, we are in a fight for our lives. We're in a fight for our survival. We need to wake up and recognize that. You know, I have a daughter who's saying to me, well, you know, I guess I won't have a future now. That's heartbreaking. Oh. Anybody who has children ought to be out there fighting for some sort of livable future for our children and their descendants.
I couldn't agree more. So again, Linda Pence-Gunter, we're talking about Beyond Nuclear, and she's the editor of Beyond Nuclear International. Fantastic information website. Thank you so much, Linda. Keep up the great work.
Thanks for having me on, Mary.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And it is important, people. It's on the line, and it's pretty exciting. Arlene?
Yeah, it is so important. And I noticed that Tanya Vidovic had posted a few days ago from Beyond Nuclear regarding their regarding the damages in Iran.
Oh, they have fabulous information. I just cannot recommend that.
Right. Enough. And so I do want to make people aware that the second annual Women's March on Gulfport will take place this Saturday, January 18th, from 10 until noon. That will be at the Gulfport Casino Ballroom, 5500 Shore Boulevard South in Gulfport.
And I want to quickly play this.
WMNF's Midpoint Thursday at noon commemorates Holocaust Memorial Day with an interview of 94-year-old Renee Hammond, a local Holocaust survivor. Tune in Thursday at noon when Renee describes her experiences from a Hungarian ghetto to Auschwitz in a boxcar to slave labor in Germany and finally to her escape and liberation. All on Midpoint Thursday at noon.
And you're listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota. Excuse me. Clearwater, keep it tuned here whole day, people. And so let's go out. Let's. Yes, we can't live in despair.
Corva Coleman, the government